The format of tonight's meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, the first of which will speak on the third tradition, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker to share on the third tradition is Margaret.
Right. Hey, guys. I'm Margaret. I'm an alcoholic. I have a lot of supplemental information. I am really relieved and grateful to be an alcoholic in recovery, to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and to be a member of the Atlantic Group. And I am a member of AA because I say so. And that's the spirit of the third tradition. We're going to get into the nitty-gritty here. First, I'll read the short form of Tradition 3. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. The long form. Our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. Nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation. Any questions? Just kidding. Okay, so why do we have this tradition? AA's decision to be, quote, inclusive, never exclusive, came, from our society about 10 years into our existence after AA tried to do it another way in the early days. So 10 years in, all these different AA groups had all these different rules. I mean, they had rules for membership, and they varied from group to group. And at one point, the AA headquarters asked all the groups everywhere to send in their list of rules. And, Bill Wilson had said, like, if all of these rules were in effect at any given time and in any given group, virtually no one would be allowed to join AA. So, why were they having all these rules, first of all? It was basically just fear. And I think it's really an example of kind of like character defects held by the group at large. Fear of losing what they had because it was a fledgling society and it was just hanging on, and they were so scared they were going to drink again. They were going to scared that their society wouldn't succeed. Fear of what other people thought of them if they allowed any, bum or whatever to join, like, what would the world think of them? Fear for their reputation. So, okay, 140, page 140, sorry, supplemental material number one. Yeah, they had this idea, this sort of illusory idea of the quote-unquote pure alcoholic. We were resolved to admit nobody to AA but that hypothetical class of people we termed pure alcoholics, except for their guzzling and the unfortunate results thereof. They could have no other complications. So beggars, tramps, asylum inmates, prisoners, queers, plain crackpots, and fallen women were definitely out. So much for love and tolerance is our code, right? What would this have meant for me when I came in 6.5 years ago? I definitely could have been excluded on a bunch of grounds. I was unemployed. I had no money. I was a woman. I cried at almost every meeting. I displayed a lot of hostility, and I came in thinking that another substance was my problem, my main problem. So even like the desire to stop drinking might have been an issue for me. If there was a guard at the door saying, "Do you have a desire to stop drinking?" I was very confused. I couldn't fathom a life without alcohol or other substances. So if I really had to answer that, it would have been difficult just because, you know, I couldn't, you know, I didn't know yet when I was very new that there was a life without self-medication that wasn't white knuckling. And I knew I didn't want to do that. So, but I mean, no one decides but me, and just me, you know, being willing to go to meetings. My presence here was my way of saying, you know, I have a desire to stop drinking. So, I feel like I crammed for a midterm. It's been a long time, guys. So, skipping ahead, because 10 minutes goes really fast. So, why did they get rid of these rules? On page 141, it says, at last, experience taught us that to take away any alcoholic's full chance was sometimes to pronounce his death sentence, and often to condemn him to endless misery. So, you know, we just realized that we had no business, you know, deciding possibly whether someone could live or die if they didn't get this, and we wanted everybody to have the same chance. And, you know, they talk about, in the 12 and 12, they talk about a couple examples in the early days. There was one guy who said he had an addiction that was even more stigmatized than the addiction to alcohol, and they called it the double stigma. Well, we know what that's called now, double winner, right? There was another guy who was an atheist, and they had all these conversations and debates about whether to allow him to stay. But, you know, the inclusivity made possible, like, the explosive growth that we've seen over the decades. And we in this room are the direct beneficiaries of this, you know, lack of exclusivity, this lack of regulation. So I probably don't have much time left. So I want to get to the checklist. You know, we have checklists for each tradition, which is a great way, you know, something to read and see if I'm hitting the mark in my behavior. Am I embodying the spirit of the tradition? The checklist for Tradition 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. In my mind, do I prejudge some new AA members as losers? Is there some kind of alcoholic whom I privately do not want in my AA group? Do I set myself up as a judge of whether a newcomer is sincere or phony? Do I let language, religion or lack of it, race, education, age, or other such things interfere with my carrying the message? Am I overimpressed by a celebrity, by a doctor, a clergyman, an ex-convict? Or can I just treat this new member simply and naturally as one more sick human like the rest of us? When someone turns up at AA needing information or help, even if he can't ask for it aloud, does it really matter to me what he does for a living, where he lives, what his domestic arrangements are, whether he had been to AA before, what his other problems are? That's the checklist. How much time? Okay, great. So, you know, in our literature, I read some passages in AA Comes of Age for this. It's a great book available over at the literature table. It says, the derelict, the rich man, the socialite, all these once thought AA was not for them. So, and I asked a few, you know, people in AA for their take on it, and one old-timer said to me that, you know, Tradition 3 keeps AA incredibly open provided the individual wishes to stop drinking, and that AA generosity means anyone can come, but our literature is much more exacting regarding what it takes to get the full benefit of the program. And basically he said, anyone can join the gym, but you got to do the workout to get buff. Thanks, guys.
Our next 10-minute speaker is Colin.
Thank you. Hey guys, I'm Colin. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much to my home group for asking me to speak. It's a real honor. Who am I? My sober date is May 12th, 2013. That is not my first sober date, so I hope to talk a little bit about that. But in a nutshell, I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. You know, I started drinking when I was 16 and a half, and I was in rehab, kicked out of school, lighting fires, robbing from all of my friends by, 19. It's not to say that you have to light fires and rob from your friends in order to be an alcoholic. That was just, my version of it. I guess the point, what I'm trying to say is, there was a bunch of behaviors that came about as a result of my drinking that were completely unacceptable to me, that I nevertheless continued to do for quite some time because, like the previous speaker said, I couldn't fathom a life without alcohol. So, like I said, I started drinking when I was 16. It started as a just a way to fit in. It's pretty awkward, middle or high school kid. And these kids were drinking, so I wanted in. And but pretty quickly after that, I started doing things that were very abnormal for a social drinker. So, I lived outside of town, away from where all of the action was, right? So I, and my parents were sort of privy to what happens late at night when you're in high school. So so they wouldn't let me, drive the car past midnight, or if I was driving the car back home, they would smell my breath and, all of this stuff, right? So my solution, budding alcoholic that I am when I'm 16 and a half, 17, is rather than driving to the party and then drinking moderately or not at all and driving back home, why don't I just drive to the party, steal a bunch of liquor, drive back home early, and then drink alone in my room? Or not go to the party at all and just drink alone in my room. And I knew something was wrong with that, but I didn't care because it was working, right? For the first time in my life, I felt truly free, truly free. There were no consequences for a while. Quickly, though, there were consequences. So I was very ambitious in high school, and I sort of got off on this idea of managing, having a double life, right? Our book talks about that. And so, I was one way to my parents and my teachers, and then I was a complete derelict, on the weekends or whenever I could get away with it. But in my mind, it's like, never the two lives shall cross, right? It's very hard to manage your own life like that. And things started happening. So I got a DUI after I got into college, and there was really no reason for me to be a student anymore. So I just started drinking way more. By this time I'm driving drunk regularly. Not because I want to, but because, I need to get alcohol, and there isn't any alcohol in the home. And I need to drink when I want to drink, right? Really, really dangerous stuff. I drove the wrong way on a highway at 3 in the morning. The only reason I was aware of that was that, the lights were flashing in my direction. Luckily, there was sparse traffic. And you think a normal person would wake up from an event like that and at least say, I'm never going to, drink and drive again, if not never drink. But, that was my experience. I'm completely blind to my hypocrisy at this point. I'm just, I'm on autopilot. I'm running out of time real quick. So fast forward, I go to college, and that's when I really hit my bottom. I tried to maintain periods of sobriety in between my binges, because when I'd start, there would be no way to tell when I'd stop. But I found that, you know, after this one J term, this basically month-long term of not doing any schoolwork, but you're still in school, I had to stop drinking again to resume being a student. I just found that I couldn't. At this point, I'm drinking all the time. I'm stealing from my friends because I'm out of money. My friends would talk to me the next day and say, "Colin, what are you doing? This is like the 10th time you've stolen beer or money from my fridge," and I wouldn't have an answer for them. I'd say, "I'm so sorry, it's not going to happen again." But as soon as I drank, I would just go back to it. I really got to speed up. So I get sober. I end up getting kicked out of that college for drinking, lighting fires, stealing from my friends, drinking to die every day, wishing I would die. And that was my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in a rehab, and I saw these people come in with very, very similar stories, or very different stories to mine, but they talked about, you know, that same, that first step experience, right, where it's like, I can't imagine my life with or without alcohol. And despite the consequences in my life, I continue to destroy my life and the lives of other people around me. But the difference between me and them when I was in that rehab was that they were happy sober, which is a concept I never understood or could even fathom. Because whenever I was sober, I was waiting. I was planning the next drink. It was begrudging. I used to purchase alcohol during exam periods and literally build a shrine in my room of alcohol that would help me get through the next day for the end, when I needed to drink again. So these people, they had a light in their eyes. They had this thing that I didn't understand, which was happiness being sober. And I asked them what they did, and they said they worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not believe that would work for me. I had just gotten to such a horrible point in my life that I was willing to try something other than what I'd been doing, because clearly my way wasn't working. And then my life got really good. You know, I worked the steps. I did most of my amends. and got back into college, got a girlfriend, got friends I wasn't stealing from who didn't know me from my, past. And promptly walked myself right out of AA. There was one day that I was definitely an alcoholic and could never drink again, and the next day my mind said that, actually, Colin, you aren't an alcoholic, you're just a depressed kid going through a rough time. And when I drank that day, I did it with complete assurance that everything was going to be fine, which is the insanity of alcoholism. You know, I had had a spiritual experience, the first 2.5 years that I was sober, I lost step three. The way I think about it is when I make a decision to turn my will and life over to God, it's like, what does that look like in my footwork, right? Obviously, it's a decision to go through the rest of the steps. That's me cooperating with God to clear out all of the crap, make restitution, enlarge my spiritual condition so that I'm in a place where I can receive that grace, right? Obviously, that's what step three looks like for me. But it's also, a decision to stay in the center of this program, right? Thank you. I was not helping other alcoholics. I was sponsoring myself, and if I'm no amount of experience makes me immune to my mind leading me to a drink. In fact, the way I look at step one now is that if I'm an alcoholic, I will drink unless I cooperate with God and, through concrete actions, getting really involved in a home group, being in the meeting and at every meeting, seeking out the newcomer, remembering their name, and talking to them. No matter how horrible I might feel that day or, untreated I am at the time, I need to be practicing this in my footwork. I'm running out of time, but just wanted to say, If you're new, welcome. If you're not new, but you're feeling insane, and you think that that's not okay, ask for help, and get back into the center of this, because I've been there too, and it's it does get better as long as we get back to the center of this thing. So thank you so much.